Kelman on CliffCentral.com.
I don't even know where to start here. It says here, this guy is a comedian, writer, musician, actor, radio host, a man about town. Also says he has hot chicks who come over to hang out and eat cheese plates and stuff with him at all times. His profile picture on YouTube is him and Snoop Dogg hanging out. He wrote the theme song to HBO's Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. There's just so much going on. In addition to his book, which drops on the 10th of May, called Dave Hill Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Dave, I mean, where do we start, bro?
I like all of that stuff.
I mean, it's very difficult for me to put you in a box and say, oh, here's Dave Hill, the guy known for X or for Y. I didn't even mention that you've already got a book out called Tasteful Nudes, which sounds like it's a story for another day completely. We got to focus on one book at a time here. But what's the one word that describes you the best, Dave?
Fragrant. I don't know. Distracted. I don't, okay. I'm just kind of running around doing the stuff that I like, and I got a puppy, and she's here.
Oh, cool.
Trying to pester me.
I know. What puppy did you get?
I got this crazy pit bull boxer mix, and she's ruined my life.
Oh, no. Well, at least it's content for another book. Dave Hill Doesn't Live Here Anymore has been signed off already. It's ready to get published on the 10th of May, but at least you got content for the next one. I got to zoom in on one of the things. There's a couple of things that you're speaking about in this book of yours. You, in the book, recount your experience of recording a ringtone with Donald Trump in his gold office. Let's kick it off from there.
Yes, it was 2004. And I was just kind of, I had just moved to New York a little bit before that, and was just kind of drifting around, picking up whatever freelance writing work I could get. I hadn't really gone into comedy yet or anything. And somehow I had been doing some work for one company, and somehow they were working with Donald Trump to write ringtones. This was back in the ringtone craze of 2004. It was a simpler time. And so they asked me to write all these ringtones for Donald Trump, but I wasn't allowed to say you're fired, like because it was when The Apprentice was like at the peak of its powers. But somehow they're like, you can say anything, but you're fired. So I had to think of, like, you know, other Donald Trump things. And this was before, you know, he had revealed himself to be a completely racist nut job and all that. So I had less to work with. But yeah, I wrote all these things, and then I thought that was that, and I would just collect my check, and they're like, oh, well, we want you to come to Donald Trump's office when we record with him. And I was like, oh, okay. And yeah, we went there, and I showered and everything. I put a suit on, and we get there, and his office is exactly, I think I described it in my book as it was as if a blind decorator had been given an unlimited budget and told he'd never work in this town again. I think that's, but yeah, it was just like kind of like whatever you're picturing his office looks like, that's what it looks like. It's just everything's covered in gold and, you know, just ridiculous. And so we went in there, and, you know, there's about a dozen of us at least, even though it's like a pretty much a one-person job. And then Trump walks in, and he's acting all Trumpy and everything. And, you know, like, come on, I got a busy day ahead of me. I don't have the best Trump impression, but anyway. So, yeah, he's like rattling, reading all these rings. You know, I had written like 60 of them or something. And he's reading them off, and I'm just sitting there in the corner not saying a word, and, you know, everyone else is dealing with him. And at one point he says, who wrote these? And everyone points to me thinking, you know, they're throwing me under the bus like like it's my fault, and he'll just kill me instead of everyone else.
Yeah.
But then I was really lucky, and he was like, oh, these are great, very good writing. And then the whole rest of the, you know, for the next hour or so, he would only talk to me. Like, other people would try to, you know, direct him or something, and he would just, like, stand there. And then when they'd finish talking, he'd be like, what do you think, Dave? And so it was completely bizarre. And but my take on it at the time was, you know, he seemed, like, weirdly self-aware. Like, he knew he was playing this character, which kind of, at the time, made me kind of like the guy, even though don't get me wrong, I hate him, and I'm not sure what words I can describe can use to describe my feelings about him on this show, but let's just go with hate. But at the time I was like, oh, maybe he's just, this is all a joke to him and he's just playing this character and maybe he's just this performance artist or something, this nut, you know, well, he's definitely a nut, but anyway, but like this crazy performance artist who's going to like one day just be like, ah, I was just kidding. And, you know, just drop the whole thing. So I'm still, as things escalate here in America, I'm still kind of hoping that's what happens, though I'm afraid I'm horribly wrong and that he is actually, you know, a horrible monster who's, I don't think he's going to win, but if he does, I may be coming to visit you.
Yeah, man. Well, you're more than welcome to. I don't know, because you're definitely not going to want to go back to Mexico after what happened there, right?
No, I was thinking of going back to a different, though. But yeah, in the book, I write about a buddy of mine. When I was in college, an older guy was, you know, he worked at the college, but since then he's become a priest and works in a prison in northern Mexico. And I decided to go visit him, you know, just to see what was going on down there. But it was crazy. You know, this prison was like run by the cartels and they had murdered the warden. So it seemed like a nice getaway. So I decided to go visit my friend down there, and it ended up getting, I was fine, but yeah, my friend ended up getting, this priest ended up getting a death threat, and this guy was threatening to come over and murder everyone, and I just happened to be visiting at the time, so yeah, it's, but the food was excellent, you know, death threats aside, prison and all that aside, but I will say I did have a really fun time in the Mexican prison. I played guitar a bunch, and it just goes to show you, I think everywhere in the world, if you can play some cool guitar solos, guys will like that. So
yeah,
I've tested it out.
That's okay. Yeah. Well, good. It's good to know. I mean, if one ever gets sentenced to imprisonment, just make sure that you go in with the ukulele and, you know, hopefully everything will be fine.
Yeah, everyone loves that.
I do love the fact that in this new book, Dave Hill doesn't live here anymore, which is going to be published on the 10th of May. A lot of the book is about accepting the fact that you're a real person and a grown man. I mean, how long has it taken for you to get to grips with the idea that you're a real man?
Just the last few. Well, just to clarify, you know, I mean, like real man in terms of being an adult, not, you know, in terms of being a man, like a masculine human or whatever. I've always been very comfortable with that, you know, which is why I drape myself in velvet and things like that, because I'm very secure in my masculinity. But in the book it's more about, you know, accepting that I'm an adult, which I think like a lot of people, I really like wrestled with it and just kind of stayed like 16 years old or so, or in my 20s for a long time. And then, my mother died, and it kind of made me change my perspective and things like that. And also the book's a lot about, just figuring out who I am, you know, cause I do all this stuff that you mentioned, like the comedy and the music and the writing and all that. But I come, you know, from my dad was a lawyer and all that. So, you know, my family would always want me to get some job where I had to get up and put pants on and go somewhere to work every day. And I never wanted to do that. And so I would just kind of, and then when I finally just realized I was just going to do my own thing rather than care what anyone else thought, that's when I think it was really like, you know, things started going smoothly. So that's my lesson to the young people, is just do what you want to do, and you'll be much better off.
Yeah, this whole idea, though, of finding yourself in that, I mean, some people are saying it's becoming more and more complicated now in a social media era when, like, you know, we can't put a picture on Instagram without a filter and we just want to reenact celebrities and we, you know, see
right.
other people on Snapchat and we want our lives to look like their lives look on Snapchat. I mean, what's your advice when it comes to figuring out who you are and figuring out, your voice and really being comfortable? I mean, does it just take years and years, or can you speed that process up with specific things that you do?
Well, I think it's like, so like you just quickly, social media, I think, is very like, it's pretty awful. I think it's horrible in almost every way. Except for Snapchat, you know, if someone sends you, you know, some video of them in the shower or something, then that's great. But everything else, you know, I think I do it myself, you know, Instagram or something. It's like this, you know, like you said, with the filters, it's this false reality. Huh. And without even consciously doing it, you know, I run into people and they're like, oh, I've been looking at your Instagram, you're all over the world, just on these adventures all the time. And then I realize, I'm like, oh, that's probably what it looks like. But most days, I'm just sitting around in my underwear, trying to get my puppy to not take a crap in the living room, you know. But I don't post those photos.
So, I mean, you could. I mean, you know, you could though.
Well, I post a lot of, you know, it's even with her, I post, you know, the ones where she looks really cute. Mm. I don't post the ones where she just took a leak by the front door, you know, but maybe I should start. But that would be the more realistic photo of her.
Yeah.
And, but I don't know. I think, you know, no matter what you're doing, it's like, you look on social media or Facebook or whatever, and it's like, you can't help but feel bad because everyone's like framed whatever they're doing as like the coolest, most glamorous thing in the world, you know? So you think like, oh, I'm just sitting here doing nothing, you know? Like I just tweeted out that I was going to be on this show, which I'm thrilled about, but I'm sure someone saw that and is like, why don't I get to be on the radio in South Africa? Because that's what I would, that's what my reaction would be,
yeah.
You know? But that's what, you know, it sort of created this world. Like, I've had my own TV show before. I mean, of course, it was quickly canceled. But when I had it, you know, when I would see that someone else had a TV show, mm-hmm. I would think, wait, I want my own TV show. And then I would think, oh, wait, I do have my own TV show. So anyway, so I'm sorry this is turning into the longest answer ever. But again, my advice would always just be like, do your thing, don't care what anyone else is doing,
yeah,
and that you're better off just like be the best you can be. I mean, it's the oldest advice in the world, I guess.
Dave, you're a writer, right? Mm-hmm. And you write for various different mediums. How does it change when you're writing about yourself versus writing about something else? What's the immediate switch? What's the big difference?
The amount of profanity I use, I think. No, I think. Well,
is it harder or is it easier?
Well, I'm around myself all day long. So the good thing about writing about myself is I don't have to do much research, you know. I don't have to interview anyone. I guess the harder part, though, is just being honest with yourself and, like, really thinking about what you really think about something, and you know, then being able to say what you think, and I think that's the hardest part is just being honest and getting comfortable with that, and but I think it's also in the process, like you figure stuff out, you know, like really sort of end up dealing with things, you know, like I write the first book has a bit about my mom dying, and then this book is more about the last few years since she died and my relationship with my dad. But, you know, writing the book has sort of made me really have to sit and think about it and be like, oh, what do I think about all this, you know? Because it's easy to, you know, to just walk around and think about it for a second and then, you know, look at some bright and shiny object or check your Twitter account or something. But when you have to sit there and write it and turn something in, you have to sit and think about it. And a lot of times it's not really fun at all, but what else am I going to do?
So the book is out on the 10th of May. Obviously, yep. A bunch of people are going to review it. If you had to pick the perfect one-liner as a review, what would that line be?
I laughed. I cried. I had to change my pants. I don't know. I mean, I guess I would like, it seems like people who have read it so far they think it's funny, which I'm glad, but they also say it's like emotional and stuff, which is not, I don't really set out to do that, but I just, I guess in the course of being honest, it gets that way, you know? So I guess I would want people to know that it's funny, but it's not like, you know, a Jeff Foxworthy book. No offense to Jeff Foxworthy. I'm not sure if you guys have him down there.
No, who's that?
Oh, he's this comedian here. He's a perfectly fine comedian, but he tells jokes about being a redneck, which is like,
I know.
You know, I don't know if you guys know. That's, it's like someone from the country.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the book has like, there's a lot of joking around, but there's more, it's more about real life. It's not just like something to read on the toilet or something.
Although you could. Well, listen, it sounds like someone wants to go to the toilet in the background there.
Yeah, she's a nightmare. She's, you know what? She's just mad because I'm not dealing with her. She's the most, I mean, I think I'm self-absorbed to write, you know, a 200-some page book about myself, but this puppy is way more self-absorbed than I am.
Well, listen, I'm not going to hold you back from the puppy. We're out of time on our side as well. I am very excited, though, for the 10th of May. I think it's going to be a rip-roarer, this. Dave Hill doesn't live here anymore. Of course, people can keep up with you at DaveHillOnline.com. Dave, I want one sentence from you to summarize this entire conversation.
I had a great time, and my puppy drove me crazy.
Power,
and
bro.
I can't wait to come visit.
Fantastic.
South Africa without her.
Dave, thank you so much for hanging out.
Thank you so much for having me.
Such a pleasure. Power. That's Dave Hill there, live from New York City. His second book is a collection of essays called Dave Hill Doesn't Live Here Anymore. It's going to be published on the 10th of May. That guy's done a hell of a lot. Like I was saying at the top of it, wrote the theme song to HBO's Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. Love that show. He's also written for the New York Times, GQ, Vice, so many things. He's also got his own radio show. It's called The Goddamn Dave Hill Show. And having listened to that interview, I think I can understand why they called it that. What a rock star. That's Dave Hill there. Kelman on CliffCentral.com.